Chiland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So we're recording on Tuesday morning. Transfer window started yesterday. We had our first evening transfer blitz of the season. So we'll talk a lot about transfers. We'll bring back our hot transfer topics segment. I also brought in one of my newer colleagues from Di Marzio's English page, my friend Andrea Codega, to preview a little bit the window, which I think you will enjoy. At the end of the podcast, available to all, we have Richard Hall to kind of take stock of Serie A on the pitch, which we'll also do with our winners and losers. Just a quick programming note, I am going to have a routine surgery on Thursday, so we will not have a regular episode. We will have a show just for patrons with Napoli Outsider that I'm recording later today, which should be good. And Alex and I will probably come back with a regular podcast at some point next week. So speaking of Alex, I know it's been definitely a very tumultuous time at Chelsea. I mean, I kind of expected it would take a while for the team to gel, but as Alex tweeted over the weekend, it is a result-based business. So I want to ask you a couple of things, Alex. Obviously, we know there are a lot of former Serie A players on Chelsea and Giroud who's been linked to Serie A for ages. So I want to ask you two things. A, which ones out of Marcos Alonso, Emerson, Jorginho, and Giroud are more likely to be available? And the key thing is not for a big transfer fee, probably on a loan with option to buy. And then the other thing, which I know is painful for you for good reason, because you've supported Lampard and rightfully so, do you think a potential coaching change at Chelsea changes anything for Marcos Alonso, Emerson, Jorginho, and potentially Giroud?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I would say out of those four, who's most likely to be available? I got to say Marcos Alonso, because the guy just ended his Chelsea career when he decided to scurry off to a bus when a game wasn't going well. I mean, he got berated by Lampard in front of the whole team, and he hasn't played since. Yeah, he hasn't played since. So Alonso is done and dusted at the club, I believe. So especially under Lampard, he has every invitation to leave. And Emerson does kind of as well, but Emerson has just not screwed up as much as Alonso, and it's really a battle of the negatives. Emerson's obviously someone Lampard doesn't really, really trust, so much so when there is an opportunity to probably rotate with two games in 3 days over that Christmas period. Frank Lampard still went with Chilwell both times, so that's not very good for Emerson, you could say. So he really is very available, even what you said, maybe loan option to buy, but the thing is getting rid of two left backs is rather unlikely, especially since Azpilicueta doesn't really look like he's a left back anymore. So I got to say Alonso is a lot more likely than Emerson, unless the team really did feel like they'd offer a decent amount for Emerson in January. And then on Jorginho and Giroud, well, you put the caveat of not for a big transfer fee. So that's where Jorginho's future gets a little cloudy, because he was obviously signed for a good amount. Now, He's totally available now for Chelsea, for any team to come get him. But with Jorginho, Marina is being a bit more prideful on what she wants in return. So he's available, but I don't think it's an easy deal to happen in January. And then Giroud's the interesting one, because obviously he keeps just going year to year contract-wise. So getting him really isn't that much of a financial burden, you could say. But I wouldn't say it's as easy to get Giroud as it is to get someone like Alonso, because I think Chelsea would still like to keep Giroud for sure for the rest of the season at least. So now to get to the second part, if there was a coaching change, could any of that change? Honestly, probably not, because I think finally this is also a club thing. Like, I think the club is also okay moving on from these players, not just Lampard. Definitely, Lampard has not much use for Jorginho, even though he is playing him probably more than people would expect. But David, many managers don't have great use for Jorginho. They have to play a specific style. So I know there's a rumor about Allegri maybe coming to Chelsea, and some could think, well, Italian. Actually, Alonso and Emerson both played in Serie A, so maybe Allegri would like all these players he's familiar with. I doubt it. They're not players that the club would say to Allegri, hey, we really want to keep these guys. So he wouldn't be given any extra responsibility to keep them. The only one I could see is maybe Giroud becomes a bit more likely to stay. But Lampard would like to keep Giroud. So honestly, David, I actually don't think a coaching change would change much for the future of those four. I really, really don't. So that's my answer. I think they're all totally welcome to leave, but probably Alonso is most likely because of what he's done. And yeah, I would hope three out of the four would leave in January, being Alonso, Emerson, and Jorginho. I'd like to keep Giroud, but that sounds rather unlikely, having three leave. So that's my answer, David. And man, to now shift to Serie A, what I found really cool on Sunday was the fact that they all played on one day, which I'm missing a lot in the Premier League these days. I kind of like the games spread out, because if there's games I want to watch, I can definitely watch them in the Premier League because they're really all spread out. But I do miss when I had that big Saturday slate of games usually in the Premier League. And I saw that kind of happen in Serie A on Sunday, and it was a fun day. So I want to ask you, has anything happened during the Sunday slate of games? Did anything happen that changed how you feel about the Scudetto race?
Yeah, and I agree. I love that it was all in one day. You were texting me early about the Lautaro over under, and I was like, this is a great start, and I have a bunch more games. And yeah, you're right. Sometimes there is a cluster of games, but this is when I grew up, every game was just on Sunday, and that's how it was, all at the same time. And yeah, and I read a really cool article on that, how much that has changed even the way we watch football. Like, you used to watch more highlights, but I digress. It was a fun day. But what was interesting too was like watching the teams back to back and kind of taking stock of the Scudetto race, which I really only see as a factor for Inter Milan and Juve. I know Napoli had a good game against Cagliari, and maybe I should throw them in the mix. I will say maybe Napoli can sneak back in, but I will say I've been very impressed with Atalanta. You guys know I love to zag when everyone zigs, and the Papu Gomez thing right away, I felt like there was some Ewing theory potential here for Atalanta, and that they would be just fine even without him. And Atalanta are looking really good. And I will say this, if you told me, is it completely out of the question that Atalanta from this point on gets the most points in Serie A? I would say that could happen. So maybe they become a factor in this crazy season. But for the top three teams, I thought Inter against Crotone looked really good. That was a really good match. I thought Lukaku and Lautaro were sensational. We also had another great live mic moment with Conte. I thought that was a good performance for Inter, a statement win, granted, against the last place team. But I thought Inter performed well. Let me just say that I feel rather good about picking Inter to win the Scudetto at the beginning of the season. Juve, on the other hand, a big win against Udinese. Udinese really didn't put in too much of an effort. I know they hit crossbar a few times. But Juve, this was another game where you just felt like Ronaldo was carrying the team. Chiesa played well, to his credit. I will give him that. It felt like Ronaldo and Chiesa were just trying much harder than the rest of the team. So Juve, to me, still feels a little bit like an enigma. They definitely miss Morata when he's not playing, and he probably won't play against Milan, which is definitely a tough blow. So I don't know. Juve, I still see the potential for them being one of the best teams of the past 10 years of this cycle, which I've said many times, but I just don't see it pretty regularly. And Milan, what else can be said? Look, how many times are we like, can Milan win without Ibra? And they do. Can Milan win without Kier, who's been the best defender performance-wise in Serie A? And they did. Can Milan win when they're down 10 men? Well, they just did against Benevento. Can Milan win when they even have to have Krunic on the pitch? That happened on Sunday. So listen, you know, every time we talk about Milan, it's always like, well, probably sooner or later, this is going to fall apart. And then every time an event happens where it's like, yeah, okay, now it's going to fall apart, it doesn't. So if you're a Milan fan, you have to feel really, really great about this potentially being a team of destiny. So I will say, despite the big win for Juve, I'm not sure I feel any better about them. Inter, I do feel a little bit better about, and Milan just feel like a team of destiny. I'm not going to exclude Napoli jumping back in and Atalanta going on a ridiculous streak. So that's kind of my thoughts on the potential changes on the Scudetto race.
Okay. All right. Well, David, it really is time we get to this segment again, which is not a consistent year-round segment, but it's a popular one. Hot transfer topics. We certainly are now in a new transfer window. So let's get to it. First thing here on the agenda, how many career games do you think Rovella will play for Juve?
If you gave me an over-under of 2.5, Alex, I would take the under. I've told you guys, look, in January, there will be a ton of financial swaps. And here we go. This Rovella one is exactly what I'm talking about. And look, Rovella's an interesting talent. I don't know. Is he better than Mandragora was a few years ago? I don't know. But I kind of see the same career path for him. So let's surmise this negotiation between Genoa and Juve for Rovella. And again, remember, guys, Juve and Genoa do a ton of deals. I always say, when clubs do a lot of deals, you cannot look at them individually. You have to look at them as a whole. So Rovella has an expiring contract. So Juve could sign him on a Bosman, but they're not going to do that. They're going to work with Genoa. They're going to do a swap deal, which is going to bring Portanova, which is a player that Juve had bought from Lazio in the deal. And Portanova is going to be evaluated 7 million euro, which, look, you know, just look at his Wikipedia page and you can tell me if you think he's worth that. So, to me, this is completely a financial move. And to add to this, Lazio is also getting some money off the Portanova deal because Juve bought him and they had a future resale. So I think everyone here makes a plus valenza. Everyone's happy. Even Lazio makes some money. Juve has a new young player kind of under control that they can do a lot of different things with. But if you told me, you know, is this guy going to have a significant role at Juve? My guess would be absolutely not. This will be another financial move. And again, this Portanova deal, look for a lot of these deals to happen in January. I'm going to venture to say that, especially in Serie A, 3/4 of the deal will be more like this than something to really improve teams on the pitch.
Okay. All right, well, let's go back to this little baller. Anything new on the whole Papu Gomez front?
Yeah, no, definitely very interesting. So he didn't play again. Atalanta looked really good without him. Di Marzio yesterday talked about him on the show. And a couple of things that were interesting. A, Papu Gomez apologized to Atalanta owner Percassi, admitted he went a little bit too far. Is that enough for reconciliation? Probably not. But Atalanta are not just going to give away Papu Gomez. I don't blame them. Quite frankly, if you think about it, odds are Papu is going to a team that Atalanta is going to be competing with for a Champions League spot. So they're not just going to give him away, nor they should. So they're going to try to make a decent plusvalenza on a player that's 33 years old. Now, the one club who has kicked the tires is Juventus. And they are looking to see if they can do a deal for Bernardeschi, with Bernardeschi going to Atalanta, or Bernardeschi going to another team, remove his salary slot, try to make some, they can't make a plusvalenza, but at least remove his salary slot, which is significant. And Bernardeschi at Atalanta would be really fascinating in a lot of ways. I'd be curious to see if he survives 2 training sessions with Gasperini, or he pulls a Skrtel and is like, screw this, I'm out of here. But if you were Bernardeschi and you want to relaunch your career, I can't think of a better place than going to Atalanta, especially if Papu goes to Juve. But look, to me, Papu Gomez at Juve makes very little sense. He's not the type of midfielder that they need. He's not the type of striker that they need. And it's crazy to say, almost in a way, maybe Llorente is more valuable to Juve than Papu. So let's see what happens there. I will say, and I don't think there's a pitch big enough, at least with regulation size, for Papu and Dybala to be on the same team, roaming aimlessly on the pitch. That would be something to watch. And I know some Juve fans say, oh, this Papu Gomez thing is signed, Dybala's gone. I see those as completely unrelated, but tactically it would be interesting. So let's see what happens here. I have to say I'd be more intrigued with seeing Bernardeschi at Atalanta than I would be Papu at Juve.
Okay. All right, David. Do you expect a lot of former Serie A players who went to China to return to Italy in January?
Yeah, I do, actually. And this is not just in Italy. I do expect a decent amount of the players who were in China to come back. This window, there's been some changes too in the wages in China and whatnot. And the first transfer maneuver of the evening transfer blitz, which we always try to guess on our Di Marzio group chat, none of us had the first pick being Eder potentially going back to Inter playing for Conte. Eder was, of course, a member of Conte's team at the Euro, did play at Inter for Mancini, did not leave a great memory there. I saw the reaction was very bad on Twitter, but I will say this. I think the fact that Inter is out of the Champions League makes that backup striker less important. And look, I know maybe I shouldn't be saying this now that Lukaku just got banged up, but in my opinion, if Lukaku's out for an extended period of time, Inter is screwed anyway. I guess maybe Lautaro could carry them, but they're in big trouble if he's out for a while. If they were in the Champions League, like getting someone like Giroud or even Milik, maybe wouldn't make sense. And said, yeah, that's hard. So I wouldn't be totally outraged by the other news. But I guess I see why people were upset. I also think we'll see El Shaarawy back at Roma. And then let's see if there are other players. Graziano Pelé is one who has been linked to a lot of teams recently.
Okay. All right. What are the five positions, David, we will hear about most often discussed in the coming weeks?
Yeah. So Juve striker, definitely going to be something we hear a lot about. And I think Thousand Names is going to call it that we might have a repeat of the Casillas move from last year, and we have Llorente go back to Juve. The other one we'll hear a ton is Milan defender with Strasbourg, Mohamed Simakan as the favorite. Maldini and Massara really like him. They have competition from Leipzig where he could replace Umakano. Let's see if Milan can get him over the finish line. This would be a very exciting signing from him based on the reputation of this player. So we'll hear a lot about Milan defender. That is their priority. I think Fiorentina striker is going to be really fascinating. There's been reports too that Torino's trying to get Kwame. And I think, look, I like Kwame. Fiorentina has a lot of these strikers that are okay, but not that great striker you can rely upon. So they need to make room. I think they're going to try to bring in someone more reliable. We know Roma wants another attacker to help out Zeko. Maybe that'll be El Shaarawy. The other position too that we'll hear a ton is who Inter is going to get for Eriksen, which probably as juicy a chip we have on the market. So let's continue to talk about the January transfer window. And I'm going to bring in my colleague Andrea Codega from Di Marzio's site. We are going to break it down by the main teams and look at some main themes in the window. Okay, guys, the January transfer window is upon us. I'm recording this segment on Monday morning. Tonight, we are going to have our first evening transfer blitz of the January window. And during this window, I will be working with one of my colleagues from Di Marzio's side, one of the newer guys, Andrea Codega, who is based in Italy, based in Locatelli's hometown of Lecco, and he's been doing a great job helping out on the site. He's also been a few times, he's been an excellent guest on our patron versions of the show. So I figured we'd bring him on to talk a little bit about the January window. So Andrea, always a real pleasure to chat with you. Calcio, bentornato to Calcioland.
Hi, David, and hi, everyone. It's always a pleasure to be here talking about football.
Absolutely. So, Andrea, before we get to the January transfer window, and we're going to hit upon the main teams briefly, let me ask you this. Yesterday, we had all the Serie A games on Sunday. It was really interesting. We got to see Inter, Juve, Milan all at separate times, Napoli to demolish Cagliari. So let me ask you this. Did anything that happened yesterday change your perspective on how you think the Scudetto race is going to evolve?
About yesterday's game, I think that Milan, Inter, Roma, Napoli and Juve had five games they had to win, and all these five teams won these games. So I don't think that something changed about the Scudetto race. If I have to say, the less convincing win, it was the Juventus one. Because
yeah.
I see Juventus as a team that still has to improve its type of game, and even with these three midfielder, they have more balance, but they are not that convincing like the other teams, because Milan and Inter are not only winning, but they are also providing the convincing performances. And also Roma, that I think that is the most surprising team of this first month, alongside with Milan. And they are also convincing. So I think that for Juventus, the next matches versus Milan and Inter will be the key for their season.
Well said. Well said. I agree on Roma. Definitely very impressed with what Fonseca has been doing there. Okay, let's transition to the January window. So this is going to be an odd window. There's really no money in Serie A. And there's going to be probably a lot of swaps and whatnot, creative deals. So let me ask you this, Andrea. Which three teams do you expect to be the most active in January? But the caveat is you can't pick Genoa because that's too easy. We know they're already off to a fast start. So other than Genoa, tell me three teams in Serie A that you think we'll be writing a lot about on the Marzio site this window.
It's always fun to see what Genoa does during the winter transfer market session. But as you said, it will be certainly a strange transfer market session because of the financial situations. I see that the more active teams in this transfer market session would be the middle Serie A teams, and I'm thinking to Fiorentina, Bologna, and Parma, because these three teams need something more in their attacking department. But at the same time, I think that these middle Serie A teams, they won't sold their top players during this transfer market session. Because, for example, I think to Verona, they won't sell Zaccagni, or also Niente, they won't sell De Paul. So I expect these teams also to keep their core squad. But of course, especially Fiorentina and Bologna, I expect them to sign at least a striker to score more goals and to secure their position, that it's not that nice at this point of the season.
For sure. Okay, so in the spirit that there isn't much money to spend, we are going to prioritize. So more than, you know, you can definitely name a specific player, but let's think more position for the top teams in Serie A. So I'm going to ask you this. If each of these teams can add one player, what role would you target? So let's start with the defending champion, Juventus. You can add one player. What role do you target if you're Paratici?
I start saying this thing that I think that this is something that we can discuss in a more ideal way. I don't know that probably because of these financial problems, I don't know that if these potential signings, we will see them realistically. But of course, we can talk in an ideal way. So about Juventus, I think that they need a striker, a backup of Alvaro Morata.
Yeah.
And also Pirlo has said it yesterday during the press conference after the game, because this team, the Juventus, clearly plays better, and also Ronaldo plays better when there is Morata, when there is a forward that needs more physicality to the team. Because also yesterday it was pretty clear seeing Juventus versus Udinese, because with Dybala and Ronaldo up front, there are really a few players that attack the opponent's defense, maybe just Chiesa. I think that when there isn't Morata, I think that Juventus should need someone with that features. So I'm thinking, for example, to Giroud or a striker like this.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, definitely agree that they need a backup striker. So let's go to Inter. If you could pick one position to bolster on Inter, which one would it be if you're Ausilio and Marotta?
I think that Inter should need two positions. So a mezzala, so a midfielder, to join Barella and Brozovic, Trinity, and Gagliardini and Vidal. So someone that can substitute Eriksen, that of course he will be sold during the January, and it will be curious to see where he will go. So I'm thinking, for example, to De Paul, but of course due to the financial problems, I don't see De Paul to join Inter. So I don't know a proper name that can join Conte's side, but I think that the role should be the mezzala and also the fourth striker, because Pinamonti up to now hasn't Conte isn't pleased with Pinamonti. I'm quite surprised, because I've always rated quite well Pinamonti, but of course if the coach doesn't rate a player, and with a team in this position that it's quite the favorite to win the league, I think that a fourth striker should be the priority of Inter during this session.
Absolutely. So let's talk about Milan, who obviously have been the big surprise, being at the top. They've managed to get away without significant players for a while. But if you could bolster 1%, I know for you, maybe you don't want to bolster them too much. But let's say you wanted to, which position would you target?
Yeah, let me just say that about Milan, we are constantly saying that they haven't the best to win the league.
Yeah.
But they are constantly proving us wrong. Because maybe just the up to now both Milan and Inter have done well also in the top league matches. So I think that there are just the next matches against Juve that will be the answer to the question: are they capable to win this year, both Inter and Milan? But I think that we already know the answer. So they are capable to win this league. So talking about Milan, I think that maybe they just need a fourth midfielder to join Ben Nasser, Kessie, that are the best midfielders in Serie A right now, and also Tonali, that is struggling just a bit, also yesterday with the red card. But I think that a fourth midfielder should give more security in that department to Stefano Pioli.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go to Napoli, who, again, to me, they've been disappointing. I expected more from them. And I don't even know if they really need to bolster much or get more out of it. But if you could improve one position on Napoli, which one would it be?
I think that Napoli, from in midfield and in attack, they are the more similar team to Juventus and Inter, that are the two most complete sided in Serie A. So I think that they could improve in the fullback position, because in that position, Di Lorenzo, Mario Rui, Cisai, and sometimes Goulam, they are not providing that that quality that midfield and attack are providing to the team. So I think that position could be reinforced by the team, but I don't know with the what name. That it will be difficult to find a name to be signed in this session.
For sure. Let's close on the two teams from the Capitale. Let's start with the team that impressed us both, Roma. I'd love to see El Shaarawy back there. Maybe that's the position you also would like to see them improve. But what do you think Roma should do if they could do just one position?
El Shaarawy is a good name, but I'd answer with another curious name, and it's Papu Gomez. I've been thinking about it because Papu Gomez, of course, is going out from Atalanta. And, of course, Roma needs a proper partner to Mkhitaryan and Dzeko and also Pedro. But Pedro is an over 20 player, so over 13 player, so sometimes he's not available. So I think that adding Papu Gomez to this team that that it's doing so well up to now, I think that Papu Gomez could give a real boost to this team, and this team could surprise him also in the second part of this season.
Okay, let's close on Lazio, who I have to say have been fairly disappointing to me this season. If you could pick one position to improve, which one would it be?
Of course, they have been really disappointing this season. And I think that also in the summer, they didn't reinforce properly the team. And especially I'm thinking to the winger positions, because Lazzari isn't anymore the Lazzari we know 2 years ago at Spal, and also the one of the first season in Lazio. And also the signing of Fares during the summer hasn't provided a lot of quality in that position. So I expect them to improve with a new winger, that can join in a better way the quality that Luis Alberto, Milinkovic Savic, Correa, and also, of course, Immobile provide to the team.
Awesome. Well, Andrea, I can't thank you enough. It was a lot of fun to have you on the regular podcast after you did so well on Patreon with us. Thank you so much for all the work you'll put in this January. It'll be a lot of fun to cover the transfer window with you. And I look forward to chatting calcio with you again on the pod. Thanks so much for hopping on today.
It was my pleasure. So thank you. And I'm looking forward to chat another time.
All right, good stuff there for sure. And David, we always have good stuff in our winners and losers segment. Let's recap more of the Serie A weekend. So let's always start on the positive front. Let's start off with our winners.
Yeah, so that Inter game, I got an early text from you on Lautaro. We need to revisit our over-unders. He was great. I thought Lukaku was also amazing in that game, a little bit banged up, but doesn't sound too bad for Lukaku, which is definitely good for Inter. Conte's another winner. I have to say the no fans in the stadium have given us some great live mic moments from Conte. We had last season the iconic Porca Troia La Vita. Yesterday, on Sunday, we had him tearing off Vidal's head off with the penalty on Crotone, kept yelling it at him to keep playing and to S the F up. Was really, really good. Fantastic. I really enjoyed that. But a big win for Inter there against Crotone. Then Atalanta, who demolished Sassuolo. We had Pessina, a player we've talked a lot about on the podcast, who's become Gasperini's defensive trequartista. Been playing really well. Finally scores his first goal for Atalanta. Then we have Genoa. We called it Ballardini, bringing him back being a great move for them. He collected 4 points in 2 games at home against Lazio, not a gimme, the second one. So well done. We have Mattia Destro, who continues to score, now has as many goals this season as the past 3 seasons combined. I also have to say, enjoy watching Shurmatov on Genoa, kind of a baller, dribbler type. Fun player to watch. Then we had Zeko with the game winner for Roma against their former manager Ranieri and Sampdoria. We had a huge win for Torino against Parma. Really, really huge in the race to avoid relegation. Belotti, who's been sensational this season, and Singo, who's been kind of the revelation on the right wing, had big games as well. We talked about the fact that Milan now proved they can win with Krunic on the pitch and went down to 10 men. against Benevento. Actually, I have to say, I like watching Benevento. They are a legit Serie A team. And as I mentioned, Juve felt like the Ronaldo and the Chiesa show and the win against Udinese. So those are our winners.
All right. Congrats to them. And I'm so, so sorry to the next group, David. How about our losers?
Yeah, so I thought, although it was a good result for Genoa, that draw against Lazio, not great for Lazio, who have really been uneven this season and continue to struggle when we expect them to win. So they are first losers. Look, Sassuolo have had injuries. They've struggled. They get pummeled by Atalanta 5-0. So they get essentially embarrassed by the team they are trying to become. Cagliari also got their asses handed to them by Napoli. Also should have mentioned Zielinski as a winner. He did very well in that game. And I have to say, Di Francesco, in my opinion, is now becoming a fringe Serie A coach, because both Sampdoria and Cagliari under him have not lived up to expectations. Not close. Parma is potentially on the verge of sacking Liverani. I think it makes a ton of sense for them to bring back D'Aversa, which they will probably do if they lose to Atalanta on Wednesday. And then the last loser, and I saw my friend Alex Ferrazio from Gazzetta dello Sport tweeted this, Udinese give up 4 goals on an away match at Juve, but they get no yellow cards and only have 9 fouls called against them. So if you're a conspiracy theorist that teams laid down against Juve, you would have a good one here. Bernhard, here's a late Christmas present for you. But yeah, that was not a good performance by Udinese. They didn't put in the effort. Now look, you know, you can point to the crossbar, goal disallowed and whatnot, but 9 fouls, no yellow cards when you give up 4 goals, probably not great. Okay, before we close the show, recapping what's everything going on in Steady Out with Richard Hall, let's get to our patrons. Look, this year we are going to move more stuff to Patreon. We will have pretty much, for the most part, 1 episode on Patreon a week and 1 regular. We'll alternate them a little bit. You know, we have some great specials. I'm recording with Napoli Outsider. There'll be a special episode just for patrons with Napoli Outsider. Enrico Passarella will do the same. We have great articles. We have the Transfer Rumor Raider column with me and Gabriele Romanos coming back. So look, you know, if you're looking for extra and good coverage of culture and transfers, consider becoming a patron. We also use this to raise money for charity, pay production costs. We made another good donation to the Insuperabili, a great nonprofit in Italy who run football camps for kids with disability. Okay, very excited to welcome our dear friend Richard Hall to start 2021. Richard's been a big part of our show from the very beginning, so I'm very excited to catch up with Richard, who, of course, for those not familiar with his work, is the chief correspondent for Football Italia. They do a fantastic job covering Serie A in English, and he is the creator of the outstanding Gentleman Ultra site, which covers more the history of Italian football really brilliantly. So, Richard, always a pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcioland for 2021.
Hi, David. Yeah, thanks for having me. What a great way to start the year, and happy new year to all your listeners, and looking forward to another good year of football in Italy.
Absolutely. And I will say, I thought this weekend was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that all the games were on Sunday. I got an overdose of calcio yesterday. So let me ask you, did anything that you saw in the games yesterday change your opinion of how you viewed the Scudetto race going into the new year?
It's interesting that, because it is a good question. I think you talked about the games all being on Sunday. We've also got them Wednesday as well. And I think that will really then tell us about the Scudetto race a little bit more, because obviously Milan and Juventus have got to play each other then. But the weekend was really interesting because, you know, we've looked at Juventus and it's very difficult to assess them completely at the moment, because we've talked about them, I think, twice this season on here. And you know, yeah, whilst you can definitely tell Pirlo's building something, you know, you could look at that 3-0 defeat, you know, at home to Fiorentina as a bit of an anomaly. And against Udinese, you know, it wasn't, for Juventus, for me, they're not the perfect thing, the perfect article yet by a long shot. but they don't really need to be that this season. And Pirlo's admitted as much that, you know, they're not where he wants them to be. Udinese were a tad unlucky in some respects, you know, but again, you know, Juventus showed the qualities. Cristiano Ronaldo obviously is someone who you look to, and, you know, his 14 goals, you know, it really is helping what's turning out to be an exciting squad. So from that point of view, I still think Juventus will run it right to the end. And it's difficult because the other two, the Milan clubs, I mean, how great is it to see, you know, Juve, which they're lower down the league, but at the moment, with the game in hand, you know they're going to come back up. And the two Milan clubs fighting it out now, it's got a real nostalgic feel, which for me, I obviously like. Just to finish on this one, I think the answer to your question is no. I think that he didn't really tell me too much more. He just confirmed more what we thought at the end of the year, that AC Milan are no joke. You know, you look at that 2-0 against Benevento with 10 men. You know, they followed on from some really good results against Lazio and Sassuolo. Look all the more the part with Ibra due to come back. You know, and you look at them. You look at, like we said before, you've got Ronaldo scoring 14, you've got Ibra missing games still with 10 goals, and you move on to Inter, and, you know, I mean, you couldn't, I think for a neutral, that was an outstanding game to watch. Not so much if you're from a Nerazzurri persuasion or Crotone, because then, you know, Inter are free scoring. Lukaku and Martinez were just absolutely obscene in that game, and you know, there's always a bit of the patzer, as we say, about Inter, and there was at the beginning, but they came back and showed what, you know, what striking power they have. So for me, I think there's certainly three teams there that look as though they can go to distance, but I just can't wait till Wednesday with this Milan-Juve clash.
Yeah, for sure. That's going to be very interesting, to say the least. So let's talk about a player who isn't going to be part of this Juve-Milan match. And I bring him up because, honestly, I think it shows how good Milan have been. That, you know, Tonali was kind of their big signing of the summer. They invested significantly in him. And I think it has way more to do with how well the other midfielders have played. It's been very hard for him to break into the lineup. It's kind of ironic that maybe Tonali would have had an easier time at Juve than at Milan, looking at the midfield. But on the other hand, you know, I remember this time last year, the debate Tonali-Locatelli was all on Tonali's side. And a year later, you know, it feels like the pendulum has really swung. So what do you make about Tonali? Do you think there's legit reason for concern, or is it kind of understandable that it's taking a little time for him to fit in?
Oh, no, I don't think there's any need for concern whatsoever. You know, this is a young player. No one said he was going to arrive at Milan the finished article. I mean, if you look at it in one respect, the easy option, easy answer for this, in my opinion, is that Antonio Conte and Inter turned Tonali down because he wasn't the finished article. Now, we can go on and talk about Vidal, but that's a whole other conversation. But, you know, they looked to other midfielders, looked to other players, because they wanted to win this season. Tonali is one of those players for the future. And, you know, I think when you look along the, you know, especially in the under-21s and the younger Italian players, there's a plethora of talent there that just looks superb. And, you know, not everyone can come into a big club like Milan, because it is a big club, and it's a lot of expectation. You know, especially the expectations grown this season. And your point as well about the other midfielders, you know, I mean, you look at Benenke, you look at Kessié, Çalhanoğlu, they have some brilliant performers this season. So in a way, if I'm a Milan fan, I'd be quite pleased in the sense of he's still getting some game time. You know, it's okay, it was unfortunate. Well, you could say unfortunate, but, you know, it was a sending off. It happens. Even Pioli said he hugged him after the game and said, look, don't worry about it. But, you know, he's still getting minutes under his belt. And for me, it's a superb talent in one way, because the rest of the midfield are playing so well. The pressure should, and it should be, off him a little bit. But I don't understand any reason for, you know, for writing him off at the moment, because he's a fantastic talent, and you can tell that by the clubs that were in for him in the summer.
For sure, for sure. Okay, so I agree with you. The top three teams Juve and the two Milanese club look like that's going to be the Scudetto race. But I think there's really a lot of fascinating teams right under them. I'd say Roma has really surprised. I think Napoli's been a little bit of a disappointment for me, although they beat up on Cagliari yesterday. Atalanta looks like they are resurging now. Lazio's been really uneven this season. Sassuolo for a little while looked like maybe an outside pick for this, but I think they are coming back down to earth. So when you look at the landscape, where do you kind of, who do you kind of see as the fourth best team right now?
The hard point about this is when you look at who's, you know, when you look at the squad depth and the squad of who should be the next best team and who actually probably is in form. And for me, you look at the squad, I think Napoli, I don't like to always use the word transition, and I think they're not really in that. They are improved and they're looking good. I think Napoli need another window. I think they've still got another good step up they can go. And for the future, I'd be really impressed with them. But I am liking Roma at the moment. You know, you've seen some really good performances in Serie A, at least. Okay, you know, yes, they were beaten 4-1 by Atalanta and the Cagliari game, you know, it's 3-2. But trounced Bologna, they're scoring goals. And, you know, they're looking like a really good team at the moment. And, you know, the likes of Spinazzola, Pellegrini are coming on leaps and bounds. Ibanez has been very good, in my opinion. But you look at the old-timers. I mean, you know, Edin Dzeko back now, 7 goals. And who would have thought that Mkhitaryan would have had the same amount as well?
Yeah.
So I think that when you look at this in the basis of who has a better squad and who do I think long-term will go further, Napoli. But I'm enjoying this Roma and what, you know, Fonseca is getting out of the team at the moment. And I don't look at that squad and think it's a stronger squad by a long way. But at the moment, they just seem to be clicking and I think they could do okay.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about Atalanta and Papu Gomez, who now really looks completely at the margins of the project. So when he seems determined to stay in Italy, when you look at the teams, where do you think he would be? Where do you think he should play next? Now, I think it's crazy that he's leaving Atalanta. He's much better off there. I can maybe see him fitting in at Lazio, but then I ask myself, is that really worthwhile? But when you look at him, what he can bring to the table, what team do you think he can help the most and would be a good fit for him?
Well, it's interesting, this one, because I've been really torn on this. I agree that it seems such a shame that he's going to leave that Atalanta squad. But I have a bit of a different theory on it since I've been thinking about this quite a bit, because I know there were some links with Inter as well. I think when you look at the situation here, you've got two players in Christian Eriksen, who needs game time, isn't happy under Conte. Conte isn't happy with Eriksen, and there's obviously that rift. And the problem is it's almost like they're running a bad PR campaign alongside a really good Scudetto race. So it's an issue they need sorting. And this situation between Gomez and Gasperini doesn't seem to be going away. And I did see, and this is not my suggestion, of course, this was something I saw in Italian media maybe about 3 weeks ago, suggesting that maybe Gomez and Eriksen could switch on a loan until the end of the season. For me, that's all worse, because I think that both of what it does then, it allows both Gomez to have a different change of scenery and play, have a part to play under Conte. And that added creativity with Inter scoring ability would be really mouthwatering. I would love to go and see Eriksen be like one of the main players at Atalanta. And that his creativity and ability also excites me that way. Whether Eriksen wants to go is a whole different thing. But if it is alone, then you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the season. Will Gasperini have moved on? Will Conte still be there? Those futures can be resolved maybe at the end of the season. So that would be my sort of ideal situation. But my other thing on this as well is that I did at first think, wow, this is bad for Atalanta, because you've got Josip Iličić out with, he's not mentally been there all season, of course, from his personal life. And you take Iličić and Gomez out of the squad and you think, wow, that's going to be problematic. But I actually, you know, Gomez didn't feature in the last game. Iličić, you can argue, isn't 100% consistent at the moment. And the best thing about this Atalanta team is you can take players in and out of the team and it works as one unit, no matter who comes in and out. Josip Ilicic is 32. Gomez is 32. It's probably time Atalanta start having to think about being without these players anyway. So it may not be the worst thing. So, yeah, that would be my thought process, is that if you can recoup 10 to 15 million euro on Gomez or that loan situation that I mentioned, it may not be the end of the world, and it just means that Atalanta have a new cycle coming again.
Yeah, I agree. But I have to tell you, I see Atalanta's rounding into shape. We know they killed it around this time last year, and Serie A went on a great streak. I will tell you, it wouldn't shock me if you told me today that Atalanta's the team in Serie A that from this point on gets the most points rest of the way, even without Papu. It wouldn't shock me at all. We talked briefly about Roma, and like you, I am impressed with them. So let me ask you, are you more surprised by Roma in a positive way than you are disappointed with Lazio, who have been really good in the Champions League, to their credit, but in Serie A have felt really a little bit anemic?
Yeah, it's a difficult question in one respect, because I think Roma are punching their weight a little bit in the way they're playing. And like I said, I'm not overly impressed with the their overall quality in the squad. But Lazio, for me, it's difficult. It's really difficult because Simone Inzaghi is just an unbelievable coach. And, you know, when they're playing in form, especially when you've got Milinkovic Savic, Luis Alberto and Chiro Immobile on fire, you know, they're just great to watch. I think that the squad depth with Lazio is the problem. And just the fact of their own finances. I mean, David, you'll know a lot more about this than me, but I think with all clubs, we're not going to see the biggest January window turnaround because of the pandemic. It's killed the revenue for these clubs. So you're going to see smaller deals, etc. And I think that this will affect Lazio because, you know, even more so for them, they're not going to be able to make any moves in the market of any significance. And this team, 1-11, you put it on the field, for me, is exceptional. But then you start taking players in and out, and some of the backup players, you know, aren't as good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think Carrera's come on so well this season, even more so. But you start looking at other options, and it's just not there. I'm also, don't mean to be critical, not been massively impressed with Pepe Reina this season as well. You know, defensively, they've often looked a bit more shaky with him there. So I understand it probably more with Lazio, of why the reasons that they are struggling a little bit. And yeah, okay, they're lifting themselves from the Champions League, and I don't blame them for that. But yeah, so the answer is probably yes. Still more impressed in Roma than disappointed by Lazio. Although I really would like to see Lazio just be able to add a few to that squad and really kick on to the next level.
Agreed. Yeah, it's probably not. And I agree with you that Reina, he has a little bit shaky, but he's probably been their most impactful new addition, which really tells you all about the rest. So let's work our way to the mid-table, talk a little bit Azzurri, and then close on relegation race. So there was a lot of buzz on Cagliari going into the season. Godin, Di Francesco, Marin, they did have an exciting transfer window. They got Pavoletti back. They have Nainggolan now back again for a third time. But they've definitely not been as good as many expected. So I want to ask you this. Are you more disappointed in Cagliari than you are positively impressed with Verona, who I have to say did not expect would be even better than last season?
Yeah, I think you look at Verona and, you know, overall, they've been really good. They've been just, I don't know. I think with Roma, what was impressive is the way they've kicked on. You know, they've got a really good building and foundation, and they've moved on and done exceptionally well, which is great to see because, you know, they're a very proud club, obviously. And, you know, to see them really compete, certainly not, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think it's going to be the easiest of seasons for them. But, I mean, you look at some of the scouts they've taken, like we were just talking about Lazio. They struggled a little bit against them as well. But they're taking the right points, okay, you know, after, even if it's a draw at Fiorentina, etc. But, you know, again, from an Inter perspective, what's made me laugh as well is players like who we wrote off years ago, like Farioni or Di Marco.
Yeah.
You know, they're just you wouldn't expect. They have really played well. I think that Juric as well, one of the things that amazed me was with Tomasi, the way he just, seeing him at Nice as a defensive midfielder and then turning up in defensive field of Verona, no problem. But then up front, you know, next thing he's starting centre forward. And right through that lineup, you know, Silvestri's impressed me a lot.
He's been great.
Cicerini's been good. Barak, you know, there's players there that, again, similar to what I said about Atalanta, is it's a side where even if there's got to be a couple of substitutes, you know, they are all capable of coming on. There's no real star names in that squad. So they've impressed me. But Cagliari, it's an odd one because you look at some of the players in that squad. I always had Diego Godin. I thought was a great signing, still do. I think Inter could have used him this season at the beginning. João Pedro seems to always impress. You know, he's been fantastic this season with his goals that he's brought to him. But again, you look at the likes of, okay, is it okay that Simeone's only got 5 goals at this point? Probably not. And then you start looking around the team and thinking, well, you know, okay, they've got an excellent goalkeeper in Cranio, but he needs help, you know, in front of him. You look at like a Pavoletti got 1 goal, and it's just really disappointing, I think, that there's players in this squad that when you look, I think there's more quality in this squad potentially than there is in Verona's overall.
But I would agree. Yeah.
But I mean, you look at the likes of how many of these players are not performing to their expectations, even to the likes of, you know, I'm not expecting Alberto Cherry to be brilliant, but I need something from him. Like I said about Pavoletti again before, there's a few, and even like the likes of Sutil, you know, I mean, being okay in spells, but it's inconsistent. So it's a massive could do better from Calgary, to be honest. So I think I expected Hellas to do well this season, but I didn't expect this from Calgary.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, let's talk about three. Look, there's been a lot of buzz on the talent on the Azzurri, and it's remarkable in the past few years how many better options there are compared to when Ventura failed to get the team to the national team. So I felt going into the start of this season, so last fall, that Italy already had a really good squad going into the Euro. But I feel like there are three players that have emerged, and I'll add Moise Kean to this, but he is probably the best of the lot since he's been doing so well at PSG. But I've been very impressed with Calabria at Milan, who I think definitely took a leap this year. I've loved what I've seen from Pessina at Atalanta recently. He was very good at Verona in a similar role. And then Zaccagni, who it wasn't just yesterday's brilliant goal, and if people listening haven't seen it, check out the goal, was unreal. He's been really excellent this season. So do you see any of these three players being an added value to Mancini next year at the Euro?
Yeah, I do. And for different reasons. I think they're all at different levels, or not just of development, but how can I put this? In what value they will give different value to Mancini. I think number one, if you're asking me to pick between the three to take, then it's got to be Calabria. And the reason for that is that he's still, obviously they're all still young, but you know, he's 24. Obviously, he doesn't just offer you whether he can play fullback on either side, he can play in the midfield as well. But also as well, playing for Milan, playing for a club like that, knowing the expectations, the professionalism that's needed, playing in the Europa League, having more experience, you know, with in you know the sorry, with the being around the Italian national team, I think that he would be the perfect person to take, because I think he's ready, and I think he's got that level of quality and experience in that sense. I agree, he's completely come on this year, and he's playing with confidence. And if Milan can, you know, if you've got a team that's having a title challenge, which they will do, I believe, then that's the right sort of person you want to take to the Euros. Yeah. He'd be my first pick. I think Zaccagni would actually randomly be my second. And the reason being for that is that, okay, he's not much older at 25, but that, you talk about the goal. I mean, like you say, anyone's not seen it should see it, but I mean, he's got 4 goals and a couple of assists, I think, this season, and he's just been outstanding. for me, he reminds me of one of those players that you take a risk on, and he just be, if he continues his form to the end of the season, you know, for an attacking midfielder, can fill in at centre forward, maybe. He's the risk player, isn't he? He's the one, he's your Toto Scarlatti type of player that you just go, you know what?
Yeah, yeah.
If he's in form and he's scoring goals, then great. And then the last but not least, I mean, Pessina, for me, has been brilliant again for Atalanta. And, you know, again, though, he's obviously a bit younger. But again, you know, it depends on his form towards the end of the season. But for me, he's really one for the future, because anyone moulded in that Atalanta sort of, you know, Gasperini's way of playing, he's always going to be exciting. I don't know just whether that step up will be too much for the Euros. But I mean, if he continues in this form, then why not?
Well said, well said. Okay, let's close on the relegation race. So, Genoa, I know you have a lot of affection for, and so do I, brought back Ballardini, who I thought was really the best thing they could have done. They just haven't been the same since they fired him. Torino, who have been really shaky, who seem to be incapable of holding on to a lead, but have some better signs recently. And Parma, who, as we are recording, are considering moving on from Limerani and bringing back Daversa, which I think they absolutely need to do to avoid relegation. So when you look at these three teams, because to me it looks like Crotone, unfortunately, is a given, and they are a fun team to watch. I think Spezia is a little bit like Lecce last season. We all enjoy them. We like the manager, but I think ultimately they're going to go down. So I think it comes down to one of these three teams being the other. Which one do you think is in the most danger between Genoa, Torino, and Parma?
Again, it's difficult because you're right. With Genoa, I look at it and, you know, I do think that they've got something. You know, they managed, obviously, a draw against the likes of Milan and Lazio very recently. At the same time, they've gone and lost to the likes of Spezia and Benevento. So, but they're not losing by horrific margins. And for me, there is still some quality in that side. I've said it before, you know, whilst they've got the likes of, you know, exciting players like Ravella, Pellegrini, they've got, you know, who also is another good player. They've got quite a few good young ones there, a mixture of experience as well. Samaka, we talked about last time. Again, just gone off the board a little bit. For me, they need to add. You can't stay up and have Destro as your top scorer with 5 goals by this point in the season. So if they can add, for instance, if they'd have managed to keep hold of Andrea Pinamonti, who, of course, is out of favour at Inter and may move on, whether it's in loan or somewhere else, I'd have them potentially staying up, maybe. But it will be a closer in thing with them. Torino, for me, have just got too much, even though, you know, you look at some of the results and it's just not been good enough by any shape or form. But then, you know, they can go and get results against the likes of, you know, they drew against Napoli. The win against Parma was a massive one. But they've got two tough games coming up in Verona and Milan. For me, when you've got the likes of Andrea Belotti, he's obviously the obvious one, but he's a great defender. Sinigu is a quality goalkeeper. I just think that I know no one's too good to go down, but they should have enough. They should do to stay up because they can score goals. And I think that's ultimately when you're down at that part of the table, that means so much.
Yeah. And I would say they have the best player in Belotti out of all these teams. And I think that makes a big difference, too. And you're right, because of the goals, too, but everything that he brings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so it leaves you with Parma. So for me, it's between Parma and Genoa. And at the moment, I think that Parma, the last couple of games, I mean, you know, you get heavily beaten 4-0 by Juventus. You lose to Crotone. That's not good. You lose to Torino 3-0, you know, yesterday, wasn't it? And then, you know, you're looking, you've got Atalanta coming up, you've got Lazio. Where's the form going to come from? And again, you know, you're looking at goals and Gervinho, whilst he can be a very exciting player and you know, do some brilliant things, I know that Josip Iličić years ago had the name highlight reel, but if anybody deserves that, it's probably Jovinho. You know, I don't know why. I know he's been linked with Inter and other clubs. I don't know really what for, because, you know, he's not going to bring you an awful amount of goals. And this is another thing, again, you know, whilst they've had the likes of Hanani, who's been good, Chuka's been okay. You know, I don't see anybody in that squad. Like we've spoken about, even for Genoa, there's players there who are pretty solid still, and they can drag out results against, even drawing against the bigger teams. I just don't see Palmer at the moment. I don't see anyone in that squad doing anything near where they should. I mean, Roberto Inglés has been diabolical. You know, I expected a lot from William Cyprian. Seen nothing. Jan Karamov is going to just continually stay at that level by the looks of it. And even last season when we saw Cornelius, you know, with some fantastic goals, actually. Nothing from him. So I think if I had to hedge a bet now, I think I'd just go Palmer.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. They look the most vulnerable to me. But Richard, I can't thank you enough. It was an absolute blast to catch up, start the new year with you. Definitely everyone check out Richard's excellent work at Football Italia. If you aren't checking out all the great stuff on Gentleman Ultra, you're missing out. Really excellent. I know Richard's goal is to learn Italian this year and become fluent. So maybe next time you're on, we'll do one question in Italian, my friend. But thank you so much for coming on. Always great. You're class. You know your stuff. It's always wonderful talking culture with you, my friend.
Thank you, David. It's a great to be on. I hope to be on again soon. And no one asked me anything in Italian on Twitter because I'm not getting anything for a while.
All right, bud. Take care. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks
so much.
Cheers.